Good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. Brian Neuber here from goldenblack.com, live in the old home office. I'm here with my coffee-drinking colleague, Tom Deanhart. We are beginning a new series this week. Tom is beginning a new series this week called Purdue Recruiting Rewind, where we're doing an in-depth. Tom is doing an in-depth retrospective on every Purdue football recruiting class from 1997 until this very moment. And what we're doing here is we're doing a little companion multimedia simulcast to as a companion to that Purdue Recruiting Rewind piece. So this is your companion simulcast, and it is brought to you by our friends at Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the East End Grill, Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Sixth Street Dive, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. I'm pretty sure I named at least one of those places twice, but that shows you how much we appreciate our sponsors. They get double mentions. So here we are. We're going to talk about the 1997 Purdue football recruiting class, obviously one that looms very large in Purdue football history. I remember being just a wee boy at the time in college, working for the Purdue Exponent, covering that recruiting class. Joe Tiller's first recruiting class, one next to nothing was expected because of the fact that Joe Tiller and his staff came in very late in the process, had to throw together a recruiting class very quickly. It was obviously ranked at the bottom of the Big Ten, if I recall correctly, but obviously yielded a number of difference makers. You know, Drew Brees obviously is the Goliath in that class, but also Vinny Sutherland, Matt Mitrione, Tim Stratton, Akin Adell before he had to go to junior college, just all sorts of players who loomed really, really large in the resurrection of Purdue football under Joe Tiller starting in 1997. A fascinating class to cover and just a really interesting bit of subject matter for our first Purdue Recruiting Rewind piece of this series. So, Tom, I'll kind of throw it to you in kind of looking back at that class and kind of doing your research and whatnot. What really kind of stood out to you about that entire class?
Yeah, like you said, Brian, it was a group that the experts did not think much of. The recruiting pundits, as you said, Brian, ranked 11th, I think, most of those guys out of 11 Big Ten schools back in that day. And, Brian, I also remember, too, that was a year, 1997, when the Big Ten brought in four new head coaches, of course, Tiller being one of them, Cam Cameron at Indiana, Ron Turner at Illinois, and Glenn Mason at Minnesota. So it was always kind of fun to compare those guys as they developed their programs in subsequent years. And Joe Tiller, by far, was the most successful, although Ron Turner had a Rose Bowl, too. But still, you know, Tiller did a great job, didn't get enough credit for this class, as you said. Came in late. I remember he stayed with Wyoming and coached them against BYU. Whack title game. They got beat. Then he got to Purdue and got that late start on this recruiting class. And, again, not much was thought of it when they signed in February of – 1997, not ballyhooed at all. It was a class where you leaned on JC's, Brian, as you know, signed four junior college transfers. I think he signed 15 JC transfers his first 3 years at Purdue. But again, this class had four, needed that immediate help, and nobody saw the impact some of these guys were going to have, Brian, especially Drew Brees.
Right.
Coming off that knee injury, Tim Stratton, you talked about Vinny Sutherland, too. And, Brian, I'll say this. You mentioned Matt Mitrione. I'm looking at a screen cap I made from the actual Golden Black Illustrated issue. And Mitrione does not appear as a signee. So he was, I guess, a guy who came in late. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, there were two. I think it was only two, but there were two spring signees in that class, Matt Mitrione and Brady Doe. And, you know, there aren't as many spring signees these days in football as there are in basketball. Guys kind of have to really slip through the cracks. You know, Matt Mitrione had some, I remember he had some academic issues and whatnot through his senior year. I don't think people really knew him. I don't think people knew of him. Some things, Danny Hope, who was the offensive line coach at the time, knew his high school coach in Springfield, Illinois. And Derek Leonard, I believe it was still Derek Leonard, recommended him to Danny Hope, and that's how Purdue found Matt Mitrione. Purdue was still kind of looking for players late in the process there. He had slipped through the cracks for a variety of reasons. Brady Doe from Arizona, I think, had just kind of gone overlooked. Both of those guys signed late. Both guys were, you know, both guys were in the program the duration of their careers, if I recall correctly. Obviously, Matt Mitrione ended up in the NFL and obviously going on to find some prominence in the MMA world. But obviously a really good player. Kind of the story of this class is a lot of guys who slipped through the cracks for one reason or another, whether it was Drew Brees and his knee, whether it was it was Tim Stratton, you know, being a guy who fit Purdue's system more than he probably fit a lot of other systems. This was a class where Joe Tiller and his staff really laid down the gauntlet right away and said, we know what we're doing from an evaluation perspective. We know our system. We know what fits. We're going to go find those guys the best we can. And obviously it would be a little bit naive to say they didn't get a little bit lucky on a couple of these guys, but they did start and finish with that systematic fit. Vinny Sutherland on the bubble screen, Tim Stratton on the, we aren't really worried about our tight ends having to block kind of thing. We just need soft hands. We just need the ability to get open. And you will be a player in the system. Drew Brees from an accuracy perspective, among all of his other attributes, Purdue just knew what it was doing from an evaluation perspective and ended up finding some absolute steals in this class. But Drew Brees obviously is the guy who really defines this class, obviously really defined Purdue's program. When you kind of look back on this, Tom, that just kind of boggles your mind, doesn't it? That, you know, Purdue got a player like that under these circumstances.
Yeah, it's incredible. According to that issue, Brian, Brees also had offers or turned down the likes of SMU, Princeton, Yale, Brown, and, of course, Kentucky. We always heard about how he took a trip to Kentucky and was hosted by Tim Couch. But, yeah, then, of course, Brees gets on campus and right away becomes the backup to Billy Dicken as a true freshman in 1997. So the centerpiece, you know, Brian, a few other guys, notable guys, Aiken Adell.
Yeah.
Of course, Aiken did not make it to Purdue, right? He had to go the route of a junior college. He redshirted 1 year at JC, so he came to Purdue with 3 years of eligibility, became a fabulous linebacker defensive end, as we all know, for those teams in the late 90s, early 2000s for Purdue. Chris Clopton, the diminutive wide receiver, sort of a fan favorite, was part of the athletic department for a long time. Again, he was part of this class. You know, it's funny, Brian, there was another quarterback, a guy named Jim Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
From suburban St. Louis, Hazelwood Central High School, which is usually a very powerful, very strong program in the St. Louis area. Of course, you know, what happened there didn't work out for Jim. He transferred.
Western Illinois.
Yeah, to Macomb, Illinois, to Western Illinois. So it's funny to see these guys. And the JCs, Brian, the four junior college transfers, you know, three of the guys from my memory were very serviceable. Henry Bell, Gabe Cox, Billy Gustin, and Aaron Starnes. But again, Gustin was a kid, I think, who started at Boston College, went to a JC, then to Purdue. Gabe Cox, he was a contributor, and so was Henry Bell. Aaron Starnes, Brian, I don't remember him really playing too much on the O-line.
Yeah, I don't recall him doing so either. Another name in that class, Jason Lorzel, who was a wide receiver who was committed to BYU. Some stuff happened with him circumstantially and ended up back on the market. Purdue recruited him, made him a linebacker, turned into a pretty decent linebacker for them, really helped them. Also, Chris Clopton ended up as a starting corner on a Rose Bowl team. Mm-hmm. That was pretty significant. And just kind of got – there were actually three quarterbacks in that class. Ben Smith would have been the third. I don't think anybody ever thought he was going to play quarterback at Purdue. They recruited him as an athlete out of Chadron, Nebraska.
Correct.
If I recall correctly, good program guy his entire career. But one of the significant things about this class from just the way things unfolded was when they signed Aiken Adell out of high school, they signed him as a linebacker.
Yep.
And he didn't make his grades. He had said some stuff happened off the field during his senior year in high school that kind of affected him personally. I believe a friend of his passed away, and that kind of affected him in the classroom. He goes to Coffeyville Community College in Kansas instead of Purdue. And this was in the heyday of the Jayhawk conference down in Kansas. People who only know Last Chance U know it's a little bit of the Wild Wild West down there. But the Jayhawk in Kansas has always been a little bit more stable, has academic standards. It's really good football. Scott Downing, who was on Purdue staff at the time, was really connected in the Jayhawk, got Brian Alford back to Purdue through the Jayhawk, got Aiken Adell placed in Coffeyville as well. One of the best things that happened for that class was Aiken Adell goes to Coffeyville. They have a ton of studs on that team. They got a bunch of dudes. So this guy who just signed with Purdue out of high school as a linebacker could redshirt right away. He redshirted at Coffeyville. They made him a defensive end instead of a linebacker. He turned into an absolute monster. Mm-hmm. Miami offered him. Miami of Florida, back when Miami of Florida was something a lot more than it is today, offers him. He sticks with Purdue. Comes with 3 years of eligibility instead of two. Yeah. That makes him a dominant defensive end on the Rose Bowl team in 2000. That made him he shows up at Purdue ready to play in 99, makes a huge difference. Then he's a dominant defensive player on the 2000 Rose Bowl team. And then obviously Purdue had him again in 2001 before he goes on to a pretty productive NFL career. But him redshirting in junior college gave him that extra year. Yeah. I just mucked that up, because that was the Rose Bowl year wasn't his third year. But the transition to defensive end and the 3 years of eligibility were an absolute jackpot for Purdue. But this class was just kind of full of that stuff. I mean, when you look at Matt Mitrione, when you look at Tim Stratton, when you look at Vinny Sutherland, all big-time program guys that really loomed large in, the resurrection of Purdue's program and gave Drew Brees a lot of kind of safety blankets, so to speak, in terms of guys he came in with, guys he had a pre-existing relationship. And you can't tell me that stuff doesn't matter, right?
Oh, you're exactly right. And, you know, you talked about Ben Smith and Jason Lorzel. From everything I've gathered, they are still very, very good friends of Drew Brees to this very day in that inner circle with Drew. So you talked about brotherhood that's endured for over 20 years now. And part of that foundation, the first 4 years of Tiller, that was so much fun. Couple other names for you, Brian. Dondre Johnson, I remember from Kokomo, Indiana, running back. He was a guy who brought some production.
Yeah,
a blue-collar guy. Chris Randolph, a tight end, not overly
skilled. Oh, yeah.
He was a guy who I think blocked for Stratton. Obviously, like you said, had the soft hands, was the pass catcher. I remember Stratton being talked about as being a volleyball player too.
Yeah.
Just a great athlete. But again, Chris Randolph was the other tight end, sort of the yin to the yang of Stratton. Arkie Starling, who I think you've noted as a friend of sorts of the family of the big Purdue basketball recruit, right?
Harrison Ingram. Yep.
So again, it's fun to find these connections. There was one other offensive lineman, Brian Kepin from Carpentersville, Illinois, a 6'6", 290 kid who really, I don't think he ever played a down at Purdue. If he did, it was very minimal. And Sean Ruffalo, defensive tackle from Mokena, Illinois. If he played, Brian, it wasn't much.
Yeah, he ended up a starting offensive lineman at the end of his career. He had gotten in a really nasty car accident in high school, and that was kind of his circumstances that he slipped through the cracks. And Purdue made him a starting offensive lineman by the time he was done, if I recall correctly. Chris Randolph was the tight end who didn't catch very many passes in his career. He was a blocker first, but I remember he caught that touchdown at UCF.
Yeah,
late in his career, did the nasty plunge into the end zone. And if I recall correctly, Tiller said something like, act like you've been there before. And Randolph said, I've never been there before. So what am I supposed to do here? Every kid's got their story. And it's just going to be really fun to kind of look back on this. But it all starts with this 97 class. This was really the tone setter for the whole program, because Drew Brees, obviously being the Titan of Purdue's program that he was, putting Purdue on the map in conjunction with what Joe Tiller and his staff brought to Purdue. This was just an absolute goldmine when you weren't expecting a goldmine of a class. This really set the tone for everything that was to come too, because, you know, Drew Brees being the player he was shot Purdue's program out of a cannon in terms of its rebuild. And this really made it clear from day one, this coaching staff knows what they're doing.
Yep.
They know a player when they see it. They're incredible evaluators. They know their system. They recruit to their system. They know what they're doing. They were way behind on this process. The old story was that when the staff prior to them left, they cleaned out all their video too. So like, for example, Purdue didn't even know about Josh Whitman at Harrison, who's now the athletic director at Illinois. That's a guy at tight end Purdue, Joe Tiller probably would have recruited, but as the urban legend went at the time, and I can't necessarily vouch for urban legend, the prior staff cleaned out all their recruiting groundwork that they had laid. So the 97 staff coming in didn't even know about like Josh Whitman, who was 5 miles away until it was too late. And, but this staff was really, really good. This was a tremendous staff period, but also a tremendous recruiting staff. And obviously the work they did under very difficult circumstances in that 97 class, obviously paid extreme dividends. So yeah. You have any kind of last thought here, Tom?
Yeah, just lastly, Brian, I think it's important to note here, this class featured four players from the state of Texas. And as you can attest, Brian, the Lone Star State became fertile recruiting ground for Joe Tiller during his era. Just talk about, again, the importance there to plant their flag in that state and what it meant to them building this program under Tiller.
Yeah, they had some really good coaches who worked Texas really effectively. Danny Hope obviously did a really good job in the Dallas area. Later on, Kevin Sumlin came in, did a good job in Houston. He wasn't on that first staff. Remember, he replaced Tim Lapano, who left after 1 year for the NFL as wide receiver coach. But at the time, in 1997, the dynamics were a little bit different in recruiting because Baylor wasn't what Baylor is now. SMU wasn't really all that attractive at the time. Oklahoma State wasn't up. Texas Tech was down. There weren't really the regional powers. Arkansas wasn't in a great place.
Neither was Oklahoma.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Oklahoma was down. But it's those lower programs that necessarily Purdue was able to go in and get really good players because there were so many damn players.
Yeah.
When you look at the difference now and then, I think I don't necessarily think that there are more programs recruiting Texas than there were back then. I think those programs are in a better place than they were back then. There was a real opportunity there for Purdue and Texas. I think something about that Purdue staff kind of appealed to Texas kids. You know, Joe Tiller was a little bit of a cowboy. He wasn't necessarily a Texas guy, but he had a little bit of cowboy in him. Obviously Danny Hope was really, really good in Texas, really good as a recruiter in Texas. But the other part of it too, the recruiting dynamics at the time was you could, maybe not necessarily right away in 1997, you could use your private planes to get official visitors from Austin or Dallas or Houston to West Lafayette for in-season official visits. That really helped them too. That got closed off because of Colorado and the strippers. Everybody got punished for the sins of the few, as the NCAA so often does. But it was a little bit different from a recruiting perspective those days, but the same in the sense that, I mean, Texas has millions or thousands of players every year. I mean, it's one of those states where you can't go wrong recruiting it. Everybody in the country is recruiting it, but it just so happens that then a lot of the competition wasn't nearly as formidable as it is today. I remember Purdue going head to head with LSU on Texas kids and either getting guys or almost getting guys against LSU. Texas A&M, you know, wasn't necessarily in the best place in 97, things like that. There was a real opportunity there, and Purdue absolutely positively capitalized on it. So that's kind of my memory of that. So,
Yeah, you know, of course, the first two bowls for Tiller were in the Lone Star State down at the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, that helped.
Further spreading the gospel of Purdue in the Lone Star State as well. And again, this class, Brian, four bowls in a row, part of that Rose Bowl championship. There's a lot of fun memories and great players and hidden gems in this class. And as Brian said, this is a feature we're going to roll out every Wednesday. We want to get it posted on the site, the audio and the video, at noon Eastern time each week, starting, like Brian said, 1997. And we will continue to work our way north toward 2019-20. So, again, a lot of fun. I hope you guys all enjoy it. And we appreciate any feedback you all have for us.
Yeah. This will be a pretty in-depth traditional article, but we'll also have this video embedded in the article. We'll also post the audio as a podcast on our Golden Black Radio Express platform. If you've watched this video, why I'm telling you that we're embedding the video in the story, I have no idea, because obviously you figured that out by now. But once again, we will have this every Wednesday throughout the fall, right?
Yep.
And the audio will go up, the video will go up, and all of it is sponsored by our good friends at Purdue Federal Credit Union, East End Grill, Follett's Purdue Bookstore, Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. I'm reading off my phone that time to make sure I didn't read one twice like I did in the first place. So thanks a lot, everybody. We appreciate you watching, appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you again next week when I can only assume sequentially we'll be talking about the 1998 Purdue recruiting class, because 1997 plus one is 1998. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, buddy.